Shaun Coetzee, who represents the operations department. My colleague Martin is on study leave at the moment. He's doing MBA studies, so he did not join us this morning. Next to him, Dr. Gerrit Ruwer, who heads the ancillary services and the development services of PPCB. Next to him is a person who's helping us out and who members would have seen the name and have become known to, Shamima Adams, in our, from our communications department. And across from me, Ms. Gina Pachal-Kaska, who's joined us a week ago in the capacity of skills development manager. And then our new company secretary has been with us now for 9 months. So those are the members from PPCB. Chair, we have brought along for you a gift, which I hope has been distributed to you, because inside of that is a copy of the new Endava, which I refer you to. There's a nice colourful picture on the front of the new board members. You can see them all there. That was the inaugurating meeting of the board, the one with the minister joins. If you read inside there, you'll also see a picture of the minister inside there. We are happy to present you with that. And it gives you some background of that first meeting and the minister joining us in that meeting. We had our official board meeting yesterday, in which the business plan which we presented to the portfolio committee on I'm looking for a date on my letter, the letter of last week, was submitted for approval. You will recall from that letter that at the time of submission, I indicated that the business plan as well as the budget is a draft, and that the board would consider it and approve it, and that we would then during this meeting give an indication whether it has been accepted and approved, and any amendments would be recorded. Now, the board had approved this plan yesterday, Chair, as well as the budget, but there are a few corrections which I would like to point out so that the plan which you have in front of you and which we distributed is a correct one. If I may refer you to the business plan and budget document, that is the more comprehensive one, I would like you to page number 10 in that document. It is document that looks like this. The comprehensive business plan. Page 10. Under the heading Financial Impact Budget 2007-08. The introductory paragraph there starts out by saying the budget for 2007 and 8 and beyond will reflect. Now the board felt that the budget does not reflect the budget for beyond, so if you can delete the words and beyond, that is how it was approved yesterday, so that it now reads the budget for 2007-8 will reflect the financial implications. Madam Chair, I apologize for my voice. I was seeing with Cliff Richard last night, so if I lose it during the morning, it's because I was seeing Devil Woman last night. I beg your pardon? In the executive summary, item 1, the figures reflected under statutory, ancillary, and development services. There's a correction that needs to be made there. The second line, ancillary service. The figure of 2.1 million that you have in your plan should reflect a deficit and not a surplus. So if you can change that, please. And then I would like you to add another line there under development services reflecting the following. Interest income of 1.8 million rands. So, if I might just read to you how that item 1 should now read, it reads as follows. The budget reflects a surplus of 25,000 rand. After the allocation of shared services, the results are as follows. Statutory services, a surplus of 300, 79,000. Ancillary services a deficit of 2.1 million. Development services a break even, and then interest income of 1.8 million. And if you add that all up, it reflects a break even or a surplus of 25,000 rand. Those, Chair, were the only changes in the document, the comprehensive documents. For those of you who have the slides, I just get to mind, this is the presentation that we prepared and which was handed out to the board, to the portfolio committee. The one that you received last week, the covering slide has the date correction on it. It reflects that the date was February, that that should be 2007-03-07. Then there's one or two changes that I'd just like to refer to in that document. If you go to the budget part of the document, which is the latter part of it, page number 10, it is the slide that reads executive summary. And reflect the same corrections that I've just referred to in the comprehensive document. So that should read statutory surplus of 378,840, ancillary a shortfall of 2.153 million, development is a break even, and interest income then 1.8 million. That, if you add it all up, reflects the surplus of 25,000 rand. A further correction, Madam Chair, on page 13 of the handout, which is the slide that reads spending priorities. I'm not sure if the document that you have has been corrected. I know that the first document has some errors in there. If I could just read from the top, the budget 2007-08 figure, and the statutory, it should be 100,478. Development 5697, ancillary 8710, GPCB expenses 114886, with capital expense of 733. That is the correct figures. The column next to that, the estimate 2006-07 should be 87,414,3168, 7071, 976, 254, and 105. That is the correct figures that should be reflected there. And then the last correction, Madam Chair, on the penultimate slide, which reflects the budget summary. It is on page 15 or slide number 30. In the 2007-08 figures, the operational expense should read 39 million. And the corresponding figure for 2006-07 should read 34 million, and it should reflect a change in percentage change of 16%. And if you just go to the percentage above that, the employee expenses, 18%. Okay, those are the corrections that have been approved by the board yesterday. As I say, the business plan and the budget was approved as such, and therefore we can now present to the portfolio committee an approved budget and business plan on which we can talk. Chair, as an overview, and I am not going to deal with the document in detail, but as an overview, I want to link up with my chair, indicating that we are happy that the strategic momentum or focus that we've asked for the last 6 years, if my memory serves me correct, has now been accepted, if I may put it in that manner, by the Minister appointing this board, truly representing the industries that are involved in the export of perishables, as PPCB have the record at the moment. And as the Chair indicated, the Minister joined us, and and to welcome the new board members, and indicated that she would want this board to serve her with a draft proposal in terms of how we see the way forward. That process has already started with a survey which has started in terms of speaking to the industries, representatives of the industries of perishable exports, requesting them to give us a view of the issues that are facing them in terms of future exports, current and future exports. This particularly refers to the PPECB Act, which is the act which is under, from our perspective, certainly under review. It gives assistance to PPECB as much as a dedicated. So that process has started, but the board has agreed that it would convene a number of special meetings this year to debate the issues and to finally come up with a proposal and a proposal document that we submit to the minister. So the budget that you see reflects a focus on the strategic changes of PPECB. And while it is doing that, also reflects business as usual, if I may put it that way, under the current conditions of PPECB. Therefore, you will see the budget divided into statutory services, which are the services we perform in terms of the APS Act and the PPECB Act, certain value-adding or what we call ancillary services, which are in the commercial environment, where we perform commercial services to the satisfaction, to the response to the needs of customers who compete in markets in the world. That is a business that we started since the regulation 97 in response to the needs that came through from industry. And then thirdly, a new focus which has come through more strongly in the last number of years, and that is how does PPECB direct its capacity, its institutional ability towards developing future capacities and development services by possibly partnering with other institutions, utilizing donor funds so that we can transform and transfer skills. Okay, the budget that you've received reflects that in much more detail. I think from our perspective and in discussion between the chair and ourselves, I think it's important for us to get the views of the portfolio committee in terms of expectations which you might have in terms of this process. It's important that we engage with our current stakeholders, and certainly we get a view from government in terms of what it is that government would want to see as value, as beneficiaries from the changes that we make to the legislation. But I think this committee, as the committee which, in terms of the PSMA, governs the outcomes of what PPECB does in terms of financial performance, in terms of national programs, in terms of ultimately reporting to Parliament, it is important for us to also understand the expectations in terms of either process or content for the way forward. So I think I would probably want to ask if there are any particular questions with regards to the budget and the business plan that we can try and answer, and that we then engage in a debate more so in terms of how do we move forward in terms of what is presented here as a plan, approved by my board, so that we put every effort in finding common value in what we do in the next year.
Chairperson, there's something that I would like to add, of which the committee needs to be aware of. The activities of PPECB, they impact on two major things of which the as a country, we need to ensure that we are always above board about this. The issues of food safety and the issues of fire control. I think those are the two main things that we need to ensure as a country that we are always above board. And also, we've got a big responsibility to ensure that there is a compliance of all the bilaterals that we've got as a country. I think if you could also look at PPECB from that context, I'm sure will have more understanding on how PPCB impacts on agricultural development based on those areas. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Chair. I think what's very important for us is to realize that in that process towards finally submitting either amendments or complete new act, that we recognize key issues that we might not be aware of. And at PPCB, I certainly haven't gone through an exercise like this before. So it's important that that we engage with the right role players. What the board decided yesterday is that we should get, that we should ask from the board's perspective officially that the department gives us their own view and support us in the legislative process, because obviously that is vital in ultimately submitting it to the portfolio department. Chair, would you want me to work with you then very briefly on the slide presentation, because that's a summary of the comprehensive document?
Okay. We can look at that.
The first two slides just really is just the presentation framework of what is contained in the more comprehensive business plan. Slide number 3 talks to the strategic theme that we accept and the board has approved for the next 3 years, and that is that we revise the legislation and that we focus on our statutory role that needs to be performed from a government perspective, that we clarify the way forward for our ancillary services or the more commercialized services, and that we structure and strategize around the development of food safety and other services over the total supply chain. The second bullet point there refers to the split, so that there is no conflict of interest between commercial services and statutory services. And then the third one highlights the fact that the board is of the opinion that we should focus more investment and capacity into development part of the business. The second slide, or slide number 4, is one which is now already known to this committee. It refers to our mandate in terms of the PPCB Act, which is the old one, if I admit it that way. The Agriculture Product Standards Act, in terms of which we are an assignee. So we are appointed to perform these services on product conformance to standards and to food safety and traceability. And then the third act is the one that governs the financial side and the governance, financial reporting, and the oversee of Parliament through this committee. Slide number 5, we highlight the fact that we see the value proposition of PPCB in the services that we perform. And again, you will see the three themes coming through: the statutory, the ancillary, and the development. And ultimately, the question is, do they serve the mission purpose, the purpose statement of PPCB? And that is all about confidence. Confidence in the products of South Africa, confidence in the South African system, the legal systems, the control systems that we have, and in the people that are involved and engaged in performing these services, so that in the final analysis, our products can get into the markets of the world and create confidence with a view to future growth and expansion. The slide number 6 is about the organization overview. The first effect that we have a board that's appointed by the minister. The new board, as I said, is appointed for a year. The minister appointed the board just for 1 year. And my understanding of that is that the minister wants us to Kojima in a Lakhotla, which I had the privilege of attending late last year. She told her department head and the public entities who were there, she does not have too much time. She wants us to Kojima. Yeah, so it's Operation Kojima. And therefore she appointed the board for a year, and she said, go and Kojima, do the work that I want you to do, and give me a proposal. Now, Chair, as a result of that, the board decided that for this year, we would not have the committee structure that we had in the past. You will recall, members will recall from previous presentations, that we had the Human Resource Committee, we had an Audit Committee, which is compulsory in terms of the PSMA, we had an Information and Communication Committee, we had a Remuneration Committee, so a number of committees of the board. This year the board decided that it would consolidate its committees and rather have more complete and full board meetings, for the particular reason that there are board members, new board members on the board, who need time to understand what it is that they should be do, and need time to engage with management and with stakeholders so that we can have a proper debate of the way forward. So the only committee that the board appointed this year is the Audit Committee and an ad hoc committee, which would only convene for special reasons. In other words, work that is directed towards that committee with specific responsibility. There's only two committees on the board, but the board decided it would have special board meetings, particularly focusing on the review process. And we structured 3 additional board meetings at this stage for that. Slide number 7, the services that we perform. Again, you will see the service costs coming through as statutory and ancillary and capacity building. The slide number 8 is a busy slide, and we included this slide because this is the current way of PPCB and the board looking at itself in terms of the services that we perform. You see 3 legs. I've occasionally referred to this as a three-foot pop-foot banana. You see the 3 legs. You see in the left top corner statutory services. You see on the right top corner ancillary services, and you see at the bottom development and capacity building services. What this slide tries to explain is the relationships between these services. Now, if you look at the statutory service side and the blueprint, underneath you see bullets which reflect the fact that these services we perform in terms of the statutory mandate of the PPCB Act and the ABS Act. The costs involved in performing these services have to be minimalistic. In other words, try and remain as close to the core function that we need to perform and the services that we need to perform to execute the mandate. Because as a public entity, in statutory services, that is really what your customers want you to do, is to perform these services at a minimalistic cost level. Third bullet point, it is segmented per product groups. We have a structure in the operational side of PPCB, where we build relationships at a sector-specific level. There's a slide that follows on the next page where we indicate the stakeholders. So we have what we call product program managers, which focus specifically on sectors of, for instance, grapes, citrus, stone products. So as much as the statutory mandate is a universal mandate, when we translate that into the operational services, it's translated with a perspective of a product-specific outcome. and the cost of the PCD services is structured in that manner, the budget is presented in that manner, and therefore the ultimate levies that are paid by different products is different because of the nature of the product and the application of the services. And the way that we try to do that is to do it in service level agreements, which is the penultimate bullet point there. And as I said, we develop specific sector stakeholder relationships. On the ancillary side, this is now in the commercial environment, and there the services you see are the certification, ZDC, which refers to zero damage control. My colleague Dr. Carlo Brewer can give you all the detail about that. Consultation services and laboratory services. Here, the board has a policy, has approved the policy that these services can only be performed with approved business plans. So these business plans were on the table yesterday. The board decided that it would spend more time on this in the next business, in the next board meeting. The costs and income of these services are particularly rephased, and you see it in the budget reflected in that manner. There's no cross-subsidization allowed between statutory services and ancillary services, at least in the model that we have. The services are performed in the agri and food related sectors, and it is customer specific, specifically focused in the business relationships. At the bottom you see the development of security services, where we have the SA Pesticide Investment Program, the Technologies Program, Training and Capacity Building, and here it is the PPCB's institutional capacity and integrity that is used as a platform from where we deliver these services. We do not do all this by ourselves. We partner with industry organizations and we deliver on a project basis the outcomes with industry partners. It is supported by donor funds, government, European Union, and the relationship in this instance is on an institutional nature. Now, Chair, maybe I should leave it at that. If you follow the arrows, it merely tries to indicate what are the values and the responsibilities and accountabilities that are established in the relationships between the three types of businesses that PPCB is engaged with at the moment. And this is certainly going to be forming part of the fundamental debate in the next year when we move forward with PPCB. I move to slide number 9 on page 5, where we have the categories of services PPCB performs. I think I've touched on those already. The stakeholders, I've referred to them. The various groups are listed there. The strategic focus areas. I think you would have heard me use the words that you see up there, because it all talks to the outcomes in the three legs of services that we perform. There are some challenges that we believe that we have to be aware of and take cognizance of, and I want to go through them. There is certainly expect by stakeholders and some of the key stakeholders and uncertainty around what PPCB's role should be, and that needs to be addressed. There's some negative perceptions in industry towards PPCB on an insensitivity with regards to growth and customer needs. The real value of the exchange of the service that we perform, what does it do to an individual, how does it impact on an industry, how does it impact on the country at large. The methods of performing these services, because it all adds up to cost in the final analysis. The lack of transparency, so there's a perceived lack of transparency with regards to the way that the board performs its service. And now I think that to an extent, this matter has probably been addressed by the composition of the new board, because it was a transparent process with industries involved. And the new board members, I can certainly say, are truly representatives of the industries. Our costs have increased over time as a result of more and more services that we needed to provide, and there's a concern that the product ultimately has to pay for that, and that the affordability in terms of international competitiveness might be a stumbling block. The cost might be a stumbling block to that. The fact that we might be under-resourced in terms of the mandate that we have to perform, the level of risks attached to the assessor's decision. An assessor has the authority to either approve or reject a product when it is inspected. Now, he does that with the knowledge that he has of the standard that needs to comply with, the particular product that he inspects, his experience in terms of particular seasonal impact that he has to consider. So the decision that is made at that level has the impact that it could either allow the product to go into the market or not go into the market. And obviously there are financial implications, because a farmer would have been cultivating his great crop for a whole year, and then if it doesn't comply, then the product cannot go to the market. So it is so important that at that level our assessors have the right skills, the right understanding of the standards that they have to apply, the right operating procedures that they perform, so that there is a fair and equitable assessment of the product in terms of the export process. And then in the current world, there's always additional demands, additional services that are required. On slide 13, we bullet point some of the solutions that we see, and I have already referred to the changing of the, or the review of the Act. The budget also allows us to make additional investments in building these relationships so that we are in a position to gather exactly the needs, requirements, and issues from the industry. There's additional training and development initiatives to retain the core skills of capacity of the PCB. Industry information, something which we've informed this committee about before. From the services that PPCB performs and the results that we record, there's a very valuable information service that is provided to the industry in terms of making market decisions, in terms of knowing where product is going into the market, what volumes are on the way to the market. We call that fruit flow information. And that has become a vital role for PPCB. And then we believe that the ultimate solution in looking at the way that we perform services should be one of an integrated total quality management approach, where the risk is assessed and procedures and systems are then developed to take account of those risks and address them through the services that we perform. Slide number 14 has some salient points about the current snapshot of PPCB, with the number of employees, the number of offices that we have, and on the next page you will see where those offices are and where we perform services of different nature to different product kinds. So that gives you more detail about the activity that drives the budget. We then move to the budget, and I jump to slide number 19. Number 19 gives the overall outcome of the proposed budget. And here, the audit committee and then the board required that PPCB present the budget, which will not reflect the shortfall or the deficit. And therefore, we had to cut down on our expenses and trim the budget down so that it is possible, with the agreement of certain increases in the levies, that a break-even budget could be approved yesterday. The budget structure reflects the business plan, as we've discussed. If I can take you to slide number 21 and 22, now we start getting into the detailed figures. In the statutory side of the business, you have in the more comprehensive business plan, on the statutory side, the levy income is in the order of about just over 100 million rands. So that is the core and biggest part of our business. If you look at ancillary services, which is the commercial side of the business, an income of just below 10 million rands with an expenditure of 8.7. So in the operational side of that business, there's a surplus of 1.1 million, which is up, the income up is up 22% on last year, and the expenses up 23%. The detailed services I will ask my colleague to speak about. On the development side, there's a slide number 23. The income in those services for the current year or for the new year is 3.9. The expenditure you will see exceeds the income. So there's a shortfall of 1.7 million, and that shortfall is going to be carried by the statutory side of the business. On the levy calculation, because members will understand that the budget is prepared in terms of an activity budget, it is translated into a cost budget, and then the question is, how can we cover the costs? And then it gets to a calculation of a levy, and we have over time tried to focus in terms of very specifically costing services and products in a ring-fenced manner, so that a particular industry or a particular product would only pay for services that is related towards that sector. It did leave PPCB in a risk situation, Madam Chair, that for instance our costs is controlled. We have control over our costs to a large extent, but we do not have control over the volumes that are ultimately exported in a particular year. So if the volumes would be more than what was budgeted, we would find that we have more income than what we had budgeted. If the volumes are less, then we have a shortfall. And that shortfall can only be covered from reserves that have been built up in the past or future income that is accrued through the statutory levy. Now, this year, the board asked that we develop a model that would smooth the effect of the annual variation in volumes over a 3-year period. And the detail of the model is slightly complex, but what it means is that over a 3-year period, we look at the highest volume of export and the lowest volume of export of a particular product. And the range indicates the level of risk that one could allow in terms of that particular sector. The levy is then calculated at a level of risk which is acceptable for that particular industry and reflects at least a break-even position for that particular product. We believe that it's a much better model than what we've had in the past, but for the current year, the impact of that, for instance, is that for the citrus industry, the increases in our levies for inspection services would have to go up by 13.6%, which is well above the inflation rate, and the board asked that this is explained in detail to the industry so that they understand what informs the model, what drives the model, and that they are aware of why it would listen to increase levies to that level. The other levies, Chair, as a point of information, were increased by margins which vary slightly, but it's a benchmark of 6.1%. So in general, the budget reflects an increase of about 6.1% in the levy, in the price of the services that we perform. On slide number 25, you have a breakdown of the capital investment, which we require in terms of fixed assets to maintain the level of business. And then slide number 26 gives you a listing of the priorities of where the budget is going to go. Slide 27 is an interesting one. It breaks down in more detail where the income from PPCB comes from, and you can see on the income side the inspection service of the product ultimately is by virtue that it will contribute 63% of the income. The sea export services, which are on the cold chain side, will contribute 19%, and then smaller incomes as a result of other services. You see the ancillary and the development services, and these figures correspond with the ones earlier reflected. On the expenditure side, the operational side of PPCD, and that is mostly driven by employment cost. Our employment cost is 66% of the total budget. Our activity cost is 16% of the budget, and the overage is 18%. Our employment cost is 66% of the budget, activity cost 16%, and overage 18%. But you can see a detailed breakdown of where the expenditure in the operating budget for BPCD is going to go in the next year. Our funding sources are reflected. They come from levy income, from a statutory perspective, external funding through donors from the Department of Agriculture, European Unions, and some CETA income for the technologies programs, and then ancillary services operate, as I said, in the commercial market, and they expect to earn about 10 million rand on that market. Slide number 29, that again highlights the challenges that need to be bridged in the current year, and I'm not going to look at that in detail. I think I've mentioned most of them already. And then in slide number 13, you have a final budget which reflects the current year projected figures as compared to what is expected this year from the current financial year. Now, Chair, I just want to highlight one figure there, and that is this committee will be aware from the annual report that we submitted for the last 2 years that we had deficits which over 2 years that accrued about 10 million rand shortfall. In August last year, the figures at the time reflected that we were again going to reflect a shortfall of between 5 and 6 million rand. The board convened a special meeting and asked management to cut back on every possible expense that we could to not reflect a deficit for the current year. Now, it's at this stage an indication. The figure that you see there is a current indication. At the end of January, that the figures show a positive result, and that we expect to see a positive outcome for the current financial year. I can tell you at this stage that the latest figures that we have show that the 3.5 that you see there is 2006-07. Will most likely be between 5 and 6 million rand. So at least the board expects to make some contribution to its reserves again this year after having had to deplete about 10 million in the last 2 years. The income and operation expenses are reflected there. The training expense is another one that I want to highlight. You see an increase in that investment, which is much higher than the average and the other, and this is mostly in the training initiatives on the technologies program, where we have a specific focus, and I refer to Zena's involvement. She's going to be the program manager in driving this program, where in the current year we have 24 students who are on the program at the moment. They are all from the previous disadvantaged communities, and it is expected that these 24 students will qualify by September in a cold chain technologist certification, and at this stage the indications are that PPCB will most likely employ 50% of them for our own service. The others will be deployed in industry roles, and this is and a new initiative. It's the first year that we have these students in the training program, and we are excited that it is going to be a flagship development program for PPC. Sure, I think that is where my voice leaves me. I think I should go and ask some questions.
And this is my first and that's my
Thank you, Jim, and thank you for this comprehensive presentation. It seems to me throughout your presentation it is very important, utmost important, that the Act, which is now 24 years old, must be reviewed as soon as possible. And in view of the fact that your board is only appointed for 1 year, how do you foresee how long would it take to review the Act?
I wish to add that this committee wish to qualify population teaching in the country. We are more interested in population teaching on the position. I think, if I'm not mistaken, not the first time that I'm here, the organization presenting to us the need to amend the legislation. My question is, if I'm correct, why is this sitting on council? Where is the problem? The next question is, in presenting the budget, I think I had twice reference to the board asking that the budget be so crafted that it doesn't exist, that we should do that to God. My question is, what happens when you cut? Because the Lord may make a mistake of saying, in order not to offend the body committee by showing that you must come with an unrealistic presentation which the impression that you would experience for sometimes. And if it is for me to that when you have not performed, and the reason why you did not perform is because you are angry at the truth. Deal with the real situation and manage ourselves out of then manipulating the budget to get goals that we can budget.
I tried to come here to do some for my elderly,
I would like to take the issue of Dijima. I think can safely say that Operation Dijima is alive. As I indicated in our presentation, that for the first time in the history of my involvement in the we had a meeting with the minister. We agreed on how one of the priorities that we need to pursue. Just because the appointment of the board took her 2 days to give us an indication of the appointment of the board, and she confirmed it in writing. And then the second thing is the issue of the review process. In that now meeting we had in November, we indicated the experience that it needed to review the act because it was actually affecting the operation of the PPC. Again, she has given us a go-ahead to start engaging in the process. Already we are in the process of doing it, hence we'd like to ensure that we respect the opportunity to do by the manner in which we have arranged ourselves to give feedback to him. So I think to us it's an excitement that there is that kind of interaction. Again, I mean, last year we had the discussion in our presentation indicated to this committee how frustrated we are. I hope that has also contributed to us to have that kind of reaction. So definitely we appreciate our interaction, as I've said, that ever since we started to interact with the portfolio committee, there are certain things that are now being clarified, of which as PPCB were not in a position to do that. So those are the results of the interaction of monitoring that we are doing as a portfolio, which is now we could see starting the results. So not more than 2 years, huh? But we are already seeing the results of the importance of this kind of monitoring. And then coming to the external funding, I just want to indicate the, again, on the side of the government. The government 2 years ago embarked on a process where they wanted to form partnership. And this partnership was targeted to impact to areas of priority. So the mentorship program started in the late 2005, I think October. We engaged with the Department of Agriculture to study on how as industries, which PPCB was part of it, would like to move forward with the skills development, because skills development is not an individual thing, it's a national issue. So the Department of Agriculture committed itself in supporting that process through development of the mentorship program. I think when they give you the indication of how we're engaged into the technology program, they give you a background on how that was done. But I still maintain that that is the first impact that you could see of the mentorship program, because funding that was received through the Department of Agriculture and the funds that were used to facilitate the undertaking of technology program. I think it's a very good, in 2 years, at least we've had our first impact of the development program. The department doesn't have an interest, but it helps industries to facilitate the process.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to try and follow my notes, and I might refer some of these questions to my colleagues who might be in a better position to give you detail. My view on the timing of the Act, Chair, I think that the Minister has given us that challenge, as my Chair says, in terms of Dijima. If one, however, looks at the situation from a realistic perspective, then I believe that a year is probably too short to complete the process. And we realize that. My own view on this is that we hope to proceed to such a level and to such a satisfaction, level of satisfaction to the Minister, that we might, towards the latter part of the year, convince the minister to extend the term of the current board, because if we start up now with new board members with a new energy and a focused approach, we don't want to change the board again in a year's time and then have to redo or maybe go back and start up again. So my own thinking about this at the moment is that we want to use the current term and move as far as we can so that we can engage with the minister in the latter part of the year with the support of the industries who nominate these members and ask the minister to extend the term. I think we believe that if we're lucky and if we get all the support that we could and we really work 24 hours a day, that we can complete this process probably in 18 months, 2 years. I think it's also important that we do that. To me, that sounds exactly like the framework the minister said in Kojima. And I have 2 years. Let's complete this. So we'd like to do that. I think we all would enjoy the World Cup much better if we have the act in place and done, rather than sitting at the time with having to complete this process. Share on the question from the engagement with the NAMC. Yes, we do engage with the NAMC. From time to time, at an official level, certainly at an informal level, in terms of exchanging ideas. But the NAMC and my colleague Ronald Rabana and I have discussed this, is where could we dovetail what we do in terms of their initiatives and our initiatives. And I'm aware that they are specifically focusing on the research and development of new markets, and specifically focused at key markets, or not key markets, but specific markets in countries where they need specific research. One project which I can mention here is the one on information. EPCBs over time invested quite a substantial amount of time and money in providing the industries with information. Now, there's a current project which is driven by the industries, where there's a shortage or a need of investment, I think in the order of about 300,000 rand, to bring the information service to a level where it would really suit the requirements of the industry. Now, that proposal has been submitted also to the PCB, and we've given it some support, and we basically provide the platform from where that information could be provided to the industry. But I know that there's a request at this stage which is serving at the NAMC in terms of them providing that investment money for 1 year in terms of helping in assisting the industry. So yes, there's a cooperation in that regard. If one looks at the objective which the minister sets and which we see for ourselves is the one that we should keep in mind, and that is we want to grow exports and build wealth and create jobs, then there's clearly an alignment in strategy that needs to be maintained between what the NAMC does and what the PCB does when the product ultimately gets exported. The question on Kojima with efficiency, I take note of that. No use running through the 2 years and not having an outcome that we can say we've done the work. I want to report back to this committee chair that in discussion yesterday from the board, it was very clearly indicated that we cannot afford, in terms of the strategies that we follow, in changing the legislation, in looking at the services that we perform, to lose the capacity and the skills and the ability that we have to provide that confidence in the product. So the board certainly indicated to management yesterday, if you need to focus your investment, focus it on maintaining and increasing the capability to maintain that level of confidence. And I'm glad to hear that we have that support from the committee on this problem as well. The question was, why do we need to change the Act? Chair, this Act stems from the times when the industries, and I'm now going back as far as 1926, when it was necessary to provide infrastructure, to arrange shipping facilities, to look at the design of cold stores, of equipment that is used to export perishable products. over 81 years CPCB has been involved in that. But probably one of the most dramatic changes that have taken place and which impacted on the role of BPCB was the deregulation of the market environment in 1997. You will be aware of a report that's just been handed to the Minister of the effect, the outcome of deregulation from the NAMC. Dr. Mark Karam has just recently submitted a report. You will see in that report that BPCB is mentioned in there in terms of its role, composition of the board. Point here, Chair, is that since deregulation, if I can use one example, the role that BPCB has performed as far as shipping is concerned, where it contracted vessels to ship products to the market, it allocated the product quantities if there was an oversupply product, that function has been deregulated. Now, the Act still requires us to perform that function. We no longer do. So, as much as there are functions stipulated and mandated in the Act, which we are no longer providing, there are other roles which BPCB is performing now, which is not provided for in the Act, such as the development service, which I refer to, the ancillary service of people. So, it needs to, the legislation and the mandate needs to be aligned with the current and the future role of the board. And this is where we need to engage with the stakeholders in terms of finding out what it is that from their perspective and a national perspective and industry perspective needs to be retained in the statutory environment. I believe the final question is, if you look at PPCB today, are there functions that could be deregulated from a qualitative cold chain service perspective? If there are such functions, which are they? What are the risks if we do it? And who will be performing those services? Are those resources there? And then conversely, what functions need to be retained in a statutory perspective? What are the risks in doing that? What are the costs involved in that? And how are those costs going to be covered? Do we have the capacity to do that? So those are the questions that are to be on the table. So we can have debates around that. Chair, if I can just address the question on the deficit, I note what you're saying.
Chairperson, much has been asked and answered. Well, I'm just taking interest when it comes to job creation. Normally, as far as I know, the department caters most the people from the rural areas, of course, which is very good. And then, what percentage do the department give to the rural women when it comes to employment? Because now I wouldn't like to say, could you kindly expand a bit when it comes to job creations? What kind of jobs are those? But now my interest is, do rural women do they benefit something from those two? Are they employed? Seeing that we all know that there is unemployment. Now, my interest is just that poor women, because we've got to be very careful about the empowerment that must go to our women.
Madam Chair, I'd like to respond in a different way to your question. As an organization, there are certain policies and acts that, as is indicated, give us direction, and those which we had to impact to their mandate. So PPCB as an organization is not in a situation to impact to the food security policy. Your question mostly revolves around the food security impact that an organization has. But we do, the manner in which we conduct our function impacts directly to that policy by ensuring that all our exports that we look at, as we indicated, the main aim of South Africa is to remain competitive and competitive advantage into the global world. How do we do that? By complying to our bilateral that we've got with the rest of the world. And also by ensuring that we've got the quality standards that are above board and are accepted by different countries. By so doing, we've protected all our members who are impacting in terms of employment to rural areas that they'll always be in a position to export. If you look at the history of the number of cartons that we've exported in the country, before the regulation had how many? We had 1 million pellets. But today we've got how many? We've got 2 million pellets. That alone has ensured that the jobs in rural areas have not been shredded. They are still maintaining the number of people that are employing there. So it should be very difficult for us to say, in terms of women empowerment and all those, this is how we impact. But we could be in a position to get that thing from our clients to give that indication in terms of their report to compliance to the BEE and also to the EEE policies. I'm not sure maybe if you understand this, that's how we operate at PPCB. But we are not, as I indicated in my opening remarks, we are quite aware that we have to impact to the rural development policy. That is why in the manner in which we are doing a review this year, we want to ensure that all those issues which PPCB does, we need to have a proper assessment on how they will impact to those areas. Because if you don't do that, we will have not contributed to a proper process of agricultural development. Hence, the 2 year period we are saying, it could be a good one, but again, it's not like the old days. The environment has completely changed. All those issues are not being considered, which in the past, they were not being considered. And PPCB has never involved itself. The only thing that we felt that we could contribute towards building capacity for the industry so that we can impact in terms of black people getting employment, participating within this coal value chain of perishable industry. Thanks.
If I can return, I think there's an element of the question about the deficit that I have not completed yet, and that is in terms of the initiative last year to cut back on the budget. The approach we followed was to review all the programs and the projects that was approved at the time of the budget. And what we did is we cut back the projects which we considered would have the least risk in terms of the mandate that we have to remain true to. The biggest cut that we had in the budget was the annual performance bonus of staff, which was taken out of the budget. The annual performance bonus is the budget which the board approves preliminary at the time of the budget, but it is only considered towards the end of the budget under condition that it's affordable, in other words, there's money to do it, that the performance was such that the board is satisfied that those performance bonuses could be paid. Now, clearly at the time, we're heading towards a deficit, there was just not money to pay bonuses. Now, so for that year, something like a performance bonus, which is over and above and is not a guaranteed bonus, was taken out of the budget. I'm happy to say that the board approved yesterday, as part of this budget, a salary adjustment for our staff on the 1st of April, which is in line with the market trends at the moment. So I believe that it will be good news to our staff if we now go into a communication exercise and inform them that the salaries have again been revised positively. On the students, I'm going to ask Gerrit if you can talk a little bit about the students and the qualifications that our staff require for consideration. But just on the external findings, I think the question that I received from the member at chair, the sources of the funding, clearly we cover the budget with the income that we accrue, as I've indicated. We do not receive a contribution from the department in terms of our operating budget. We generate the operating budget through the services that we perform and through invoicing our customers and managing that through a proper finance and debtors control and financial process. However, in terms of our development budget, the department has allocated an investment of 1.8 million rands towards the technology program. So it is in that regard where the department is certainly supporting us in terms of our investment. I think there's the one question on the technology. Dina, I'm not going to put you on the line now. I think it's very unfair, but maybe my colleague can speak about that a little bit.
Madam Chair, to answer your question, the minimum qualification to participate in the Black Technologies program is that you have to have a national diploma received at one of our national technicons. The process that was undertaken, there was invitations and advertisements in most of the major agricultural popular press and also set to all the various technicons, and based on the applications there was also a criteria in terms of reference drawn up to select participants and also to have a geographical spread of participants. So if we have 25 candidates, not to have 25 candidates only from this debate. So there's a geographical spread of candidates all over the country. There's other criteria. There was interviews with each one of these participants being held, and out of that there was a selection of people based on certain criteria. But the main criteria was a national diploma, either in food technology or environmental health. And funding from that is coming from the AgriSeeker, the SSO program, and also from the Department of Agriculture. Chair, but just on this question of empowering Runite, I don't know if this committee realized how much the co-funded program from the European Union, the SA Precious Tide program, is doing regarding capacity building in the emerging sector for farmers to come and ensure that they come compliant with European export legislation. A lot of energy, a lot of money is spent for training initiatives through our stakeholders and through our internal staff to build that capacity and knowledge to the farmers out there to at least bring them into the mainstream of the export environment that they can make use of this opportunity in the future. Thank you.
Thanks for
thank you, Madam Chair. We are certainly looking forward to the 22nd of May. It was announced to the board yesterday, and the board members, certainly the new board members, are also looking forward to that opportunity because it's going to be a joint opportunity of exploring relationships and understanding. So we'll be in contact with you for that. Thank you very much.
I'm fine. I just come out of the PPD and apparently there's another thing, but I don't know what time it's starting of the Ingonyama. It's just like one continuous thing. Well, I just took this one, but I think after this one, they might have a split one again of the other one. If I can leave around 12:30. Okay.
The number of titles at this stage which we have in respect of the land. In other words, these are title deeds amount to 1,491. And the land spread over 61 municipal areas, and the population living on trust land is, according to Statistics South Africa, 4.558 million, and there are 241 traditional councils, the traditional authorities, which have jurisdiction over this land. And then the founding of enabling acts of the trust is Ngonyama Trust Act number 3 of 1994 as amended. The reason why I emphasize this is that in the management of land, when one says about 2.7 million hectares of land, one assumes that that's a clean slate of land. For that reason, then, I wish this honorable committee to bear in mind that this ownership is one thing, but once you go to the details of what is on land, you will notice the difficulties and why our settlement looks the way it is. What I wish to suggest, Chair, is that the following page, we just skip it for a moment, which says strategic plan and budget, because it just gives you the facts and it tells you how the state plan was formulated, what we took into consideration, and so on. We may come back to that later on. But the next page is a page which says overview of budget and trust funding. Once again, we want to emphasize that the total budget requirement for the year 2007-2008 is 18,219,210 cents, which includes voted fund of 2,351,000. The diagram that is before you tells you one thing. One, we derive of this budget only 2,351,000 comes from the government, which we call voter fund. So out of the 18 million, 15 million is own generated funds. In terms of the act, the minister must provide the funds for the administration of the board. That means the payment of the staff, hospital and office accommodation, expenses incurred in the course of the board activity, the meeting, etc. But the rest of the budget comes from the funds which are self-generated. So that reason we emphasize that. The page immediately after that, which is a critical page, we talk about the target perspective. You will see you've got outcomes, you've got the output, you've got the indicators, and then you've got the specific. Yes. We start with the strategic objective, which is the update of land tenure information system. As a landowner, there are many things that you need to know about your land. Firstly, you need to know where your land is, how big your land is, and what is on your land. On such vast tract of land entails, in other words, we must have an update on land tenure information system. We cannot be able to travel the province on a daily basis to see what is there, but if somebody wants to interface with us, we must be able, through a system of land tenure information system, talk to that individual and say, on that piece of land where you have indicated the interest, this is what you are going to find. So you will notice that we have budgeted 100,000 rand just to get that information system up to date with information. This system is computerized and will have it on it, in it the property asset register, and which will include titles held by the trust. It will include all sorts of tenures that are on trust land. Those would be, among others, permissions to occupy, leases, development rights agreement, land availability agreement, and servitude. And your next page talks to facilitation of transfer of Kwazulu Town to local authorities. You would not ordinarily find this exercise in other provinces, even if there were boards of the same kind. The only difference with Ngonyama Trust Board or ICB is that the land that we inherited included what was called townships, which were established in terms of Proclamation Article 93 of 1962. And therefore, when the Act was amended, it instructed the board to take away those towns from its asset register and give them over to municipalities. And it's for that reason that we have a strategic objective to continue taking out those properties which were township from our own asset register and give them over to the municipalities. And question may well arise to say, how long does it take then to remove this township? Because invariably every year in your strategic plan you have that. There are answers to that. We can talk about them, time permitting, but in a nutshell, what I want to explain is that, like I said earlier, we have land information system, which we are busy updating. And number two, you need to know where are these towns, what is their boundaries, what is whether they are registered in the deeds office. And once you've done all that information, you then are able to transfer the exact property rather than transferring more than what you're supposed to transfer or lesser than what you're supposed to transfer. So that is part of our strategic objective. And the next slide deals with facilitate the transfer of state domestic properties. Again, this is one exercise which is only unique to the Ngonyama Trust. It may well be similar maybe once you deal with land reform at some state with the Department of Land Affairs. But again, in a nutshell, what does that mean? Is the following, is that every property that is used for state domestic, whether it is in the former township or is within the traditional council land, that property must be transferred to the relevant state department. What I mean by that, a school, for instance, in terms of the school act, belongs to the government. Whether it was built by the community or not, in terms of the education, and there are only two kinds of school, a public school or independent school. So what we're talking about here, we're talking about what we call public school, if that relates to school. A police station that is built on trust land, that police station must be registered in the name of the state by the appropriate government department. The same with a clinic, the same with a crèche, the same maybe with an office of Department of Agriculture or Department of Home Affairs that you'll find on communal land. Insofar as it pertains to Ngonyama Trust, those properties must first be identified and thereafter they must be transferred to the relevant State Department. Of course, there is another problem with Ngonyama Trust in this regard. Our Act states that only those properties which were used for state domestic purposes in 1994 must be transferred to the state. In the meantime, however, the state has been building a number of properties, schools, police stations, and so on. The question is whether we'll be transferring that or entering into a lease or entering into other arrangements. So it's always crucial for us not only to identify property which is classified as state domestic property, but also to identify when was it constructed. So hence it requires planning and it requires some budgetary exercise. I think in a nutshell you would see that we're focused only on these three items, and then they look very small and they look very simple. But what is the reality on the ground? We're trying now to demonstrate that if you talk to a person, like I said earlier on, that person's mind is now in the next slide. We've just taken a typical example what a type of deed with a purpose. You'll see that there is an egg on this picture. It's just like an egg, but that's a typical example which tells you that this is remainder of reserve number as communal land used to be referred to. It's still referred to in the deed office as reserve number 22, and then it tells you that the size of this reserve is 110,000 hectares. However, it's not a clean slate as it appears there. So we as a board had to work on that premise. We said, firstly, we've got the land. We assume it is a clean slate. But that is not what obtains on the ground, and therefore, with your permission, Chair, if we look now and on the next slide, we start now having figures. And then we've got there the same reserve now. What is there on it? We are there talking about what we said, the lichen there. What you will find, you'll find that there are dwelling or residential areas. There are small holdings, some people will call them subsistence farming. There are game farm or stock conservation areas. There are forests or woodlots. There are mining. There are dams. There are schools. There are commercial sites. That is what now immediately you find on land which in the first instance as a body are told you own now, and you're told you must manage. Before you must manage, you must know what is on the land, and now we're telling you that is what you typically find in any piece of land you own. And then the next slide after this, now we are now beginning to talk about the forms of tenures on this land which we have. You'd find that there are leases, and these leases are mainly commercial, and some of the leases are 99 year leases which we inherited from the predecessor to the ITV, but they are leases. And then the next slide tells you now over and above leases you've got permissions to occupy. And then the next slide will tell you that over and above permission to occupy, you've got state domestic tenure. We call it a tenure in this sense because, for instance, we're not collecting rent. It's a unique kind of tenure because you've got schools, you've got clinics, and so on, which you inherited. We did not immediately say, right, this is a school. We want rental from the school. Or this is a school, you've got a PTO. Some schools are PTO, some do not. The same with police stations. Sometimes you get to know that there is a police station. Apart from that, you will have servitudes. Apart from that, you will have land availability agreement. You will also have indigenous title. Indigenous title would be your biggest form of tenure where you go to a particular house, for instance, you say, just explain to us what is your tenure here. Somebody says, what are you talking about? My grandparents lived here. My parents lived here. I'm living here. Why? Because he gave this land to us. Are you paying anything? No. So, have you got anything in writing? No. Those are the kinds of indigenous title for land, which indigenous title for purposes of now is now even protected by what we call informal protection of right to land act. And then there are mining rights, which will of course form part of partly leases and partly royalties as well. So we're trying just to demonstrate with this slide where you see, and originally you see a clean air, and then as you move from page to page you see that there are more and more kinds of pictures. But we're explaining that these are the kinds of tenures. To us, tenure is the source of income. Because if a person has got a lease, that person enters into a lease with us. A person has got permission to occupy, we can identify that what that person is paying, what income is generated. We've got mining rights, you know that we've got surface leases, plus we've got royalties to collect from that enterprise of individual. So in a nutshell, surface I now move to all the slides where there are pictures rather in